The following podcast contains true stories of sex, kink, gender, or body image. And that means you need to be a consenting adult to be here. So we all good? Well, then let's go.
I am enormous. Get used to it. Everyone tells me I'm too much. Maybe it's just you're not enough for me. Can't you see? I'm the kind of woman I'm supposed to be.
Hi there, and welcome to the Body Storytelling Podcast. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour, and this week we have a story from public health nerd and sex worker Ryan Reed. Well, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter, but Body is returning to live shows. Our first live show back is going to be on Saturday, June 19th, and it's going to be in San Francisco. I am getting contacted from people all over the country who are booking plane tickets, and they're getting on a plane to come to be at the first post-pandemic, outdoor, fully vaccinated Body Live. You know it's what I love more than anything, and I'd love to see you there. And I will tell you, you better get your tickets right now because entire sections are already sold out. There's still some seats left, so get them as soon as possible. There's a link in the show notes. Remember, Saturday, June 19th, our first post-pandemic show. I'd love for you to be there. Stories are such a great way to relax and escape the world. And if you're looking for more great storytelling in your life, I recommend Dipsy. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. Each Dipsy story features characters that feel real in relatable, immersive scenarios. Dipsy's believable characters and stories transport you to where you need to go, and you'll feel like you're right there. I'm enjoying Dipsy's Wanderlust series because travel has been a big part of my fantasies lately. And that Andrew? Yes, please. If you need to unwind after a long day of work or just need a way to escape the day-to-day, you can reset and reconnect with yourself with stories from Dipsy. Dipsy also has wellness sessions to help you learn more about yourself. Friends have been telling me how much they love Dipsy's bedtime stories and soundscapes to help them relax before they drift off to sleep. It's been too long. It's time to allow your mind to lead your body into new, different sensations and fantasies. It's time to start feeling like yourself again, and getting in touch with your fantasies is a great way to do that. Dipsy releases new stories every week, so there's always more to explore, no matter who you're into or what turns you on. And Dipsy offers you unlimited access to their library of more than 400 short, sexy stories. We know you love stories because you're a listener to the Body Storytelling Podcast. They know it too, so right now, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/DIXIE. That's a 30-day free trial when you go to dipseastories.com/Dixie. Storytelling is self-care, so put more stories in your ears and make it all about you for a while. Head over to dipsystories.com right now and tell them I sent you by using the promo code Dixie. Well, I bet you're ready for a story. But before I tell you a story, I want to give you a little backstory. So this thing I've been doing, body storytelling, just, you know, nearly 15 years, it always goes perfectly, right? Everybody gets it. The community is completely on board with everything. We know how to behave, right? Well, this story came from a show, which is from a time when somebody didn't get it. A few years ago, I had been producing a show in multiple cities, and I was on the road, and there was a person who violated my consent, not the community's consent, my consent, in this really public, humiliating way. in a way that made me lie down and not be able to get back up. I was in bed for days, crying and depressed. And eventually I decided I can't do this. I need to try something else. So I announced that my next show was not going to be focused on sex, kink, and gender. It was going to be focused on no holds barred stories. And the reason for that is I could not coach a story about sex because of this very public humiliation I had just suffered. It made me question whether this was something I could do anymore. And so I put together a show called Bonafide Storytelling. No holds barred stories, but not about sex, kink, or gender. It was a massive experiment, and I didn't know if it was going to work. But luckily, there were stories that I'd never had an opportunity to put on stage. And finally, we had the right format for that. This story is from that show. The show where I could not coach a sex and kink story, and I needed to change gears. I needed to see if this was something that I could do for the rest of my life, or if I could continue. So, this story is not specifically about sex and kink, but it's sex and kink adjacent, and it's a big life story. That said, let me tell you about the storyteller. Ryan Reed is a part-time public health nerd, part-time sex worker, and full-time sexual deviant. He lived in San Francisco at the time of this recording, but has since moved away to pursue a career. He's performed with Body and several other local events and has a deep love for the art of storytelling. Hold on to your seats and for God's sake, find some hand sanitizer because you're going to need it after this story. This storyteller is Ryan Reed.
So, like Dixie said, I'm a medical student. And 2 months ago, I sat down with my residency advisor because I'm getting ready to apply for the next stage of my career. And she asked me the question that I knew was coming. She said, "So, why do you want to be a primary care doctor?" And, you know, I've been writing essays for scholarships and getting ready for this for months, and I have tons of great answers. And I just didn't want to tell one of the stories that I've been telling and had gotten used to. And I don't know why I did it, but it was the right time, and I said, "I could tell you one of the stories, but how do you feel about me telling you the real story?" And so she put down her clipboard, and she sat back in her chair, and she looked me in the eye a little bit cautiously, and she said, "I want to hear the real story." This is the story that I told her. I met Paul in 2010 when I was escorting in San Francisco. To be clear, when I say escorting, I mean I was a hooker. I was a prostitute. People called me, and most of the time, we had sex and they paid me money. The thing about escorting that you can't really appreciate until you do it from one end or the other is that when somebody hires you as an escort, they've already looked at your pictures. They know what you look like, but you have no fucking clue what they look like till you get to the door. So I showed up, and I've learned to embrace this moment. It's kind of the fun of, oh God, what have I signed up for? And you never know. And when Paul opened the door, I was relieved because he looked like so many of the guys that I'd seen walking around the Castro. He had camo cargo shorts and a worn tank top and flip-flops. And he had these eyes, these mischievous eyes and this devilish grin, and I just knew this guy had stories to tell, and I had a feeling I was about to become one of them. But I also saw his sunken cheeks and his bulging belly. And I saw the veins in his arms, and I'd only been in San Francisco but a few months, but I knew he had HIV, like most of the men that I was meeting in San Francisco. But the difference was, he didn't have the choice about whether or not to tell me, because as soon as I saw his body told me for him. So when he opened the door and he looked at me, there was a moment of silence, and I could tell he was waiting to see if I would walk away or come in. And I knew that if I walked away, I wouldn't be the first person that had done it. And as soon as I realized that he was giving me that choice, I realized I didn't have a choice, because I refused to add my name to the list of people who looked at him and said, "I will not touch your body." So I leaned in and I gave him a kiss, and he smiled at me like nothing had happened, and we walked inside. You know, I expected him to take me to the bedroom, but he actually took me on a tour of his house, which was kind of nice. He led me through his living room and showed me these ornate Thai masks and told me how he had collected them with his husband. He showed me this framed article of when he got arrested in Chicago with the original ACT UP riots, demanding that the government come up with a cure for AIDS for him and his friends. And he showed me these seemingly random trinkets that he had saved to remember the people who didn't make it until that cure came. He led me upstairs, and when we got to the top, he took me to a bedroom, and he opened it, and clearly it was a child's bedroom. He ran his hand over these wooden bunk beds and told me that he had made them by hand, because when his boys grew up, he wanted them to make memories in that room. His boys were about 7 and 9 at the time, and he said that they didn't live there anymore, but they still visited, and that was all he said. But I could tell in the way that he talked about them that this man had such love for his children and such love for his family, and I just knew that this was the type of guy that any kid would be proud to call their dad. But when I started thinking about that, I started wondering, well, where is his loving husband? And where are those kids? And why is he telling all this to me? Some hooker, some stranger that he's never even met before. And I wanted to ask, and I just couldn't. And so he closed the door, and we left. We did go to his bedroom, and we did have sex. But I'm not going to talk about that today, because the sex isn't what I remember about that afternoon. When I think back on it, I like to think that hopefully it was healing for both of us. Because for me, it was the first time that I was able to look past somebody's HIV and just love the person in that body and have it not matter. And for him, I'd like to think that maybe I was just one more data point to show him that he did deserve love and he did deserve to be touched. When we were done, he walked me downstairs and he handed me just this fat wad of bills. It was clearly more than he owed me or than I had earned. And he said thank you, and I said thank you, and gave each other a hug, and I left. I walked out the door and he closed it behind me, and I just walked home in this balmy July afternoon. He never called me again. And a few months later, I took my last call as an escort, but his house was in the neighborhood and I walked by often, but I never saw him again. But that wasn't the last time I saw Paul. A few years later, Paul found me again, but it was at work this time. I was working as a researcher and it was a Monday. I came in and I did what I did every Monday, and I was reviewing paperwork, getting ready to start the week, and that's when I saw his name. It was on a list of deaths from the last week. I almost didn't recognize it because I never knew his real name. That's how escorting works. But I knew the address, and when I read on, I knew it was him. And I could just feel my heart breaking. When I read on, I discovered that Paul had died at home, his heart slowly failing, with meth running through his veins. I have no idea where the afternoon that we spent together fit into that storyline, but somewhere along the way, Paul found meth. And when he found meth, he lost everything. He lost his husband, he lost his boys, and he lost any hope of that future that they had for each other as a family. I read reports like this every single day, but something about it made it different because I knew him, and it felt so real. I knew that this man had died of a broken heart. On his last day, he felt weak, and they put him in a bathtub. And when he finally felt strong enough to stand up, he lifted himself up and he dropped to the ground. His heart quivered in his chest and it stopped. And he took his last breath. As I read those sentences, I lost it. I just could not handle it. I told my boss something has come up and I have to go. And I left and I didn't apologize. I took Muni straight home. And as soon as I got off, I just walked. I didn't care where I went. I just had to walk. And I walked and I walked and I stopped. Because I saw a sign on the sidewalk. Estate sale. His address today. Right now. And I don't know why I did it, but I had to go, and I walked over and walked straight through that open door, and suddenly all of these memories that I had forgotten about that afternoon came flooding back, and it was so real again. The masks and the boys and the bunk beds, it was all there. You know, I looked through his cupboards, and there were still spices and Tupperware inside. I looked under his bed, and there was this abandoned bottle of poppers leaking into the carpet and some forgotten socks. And I ran my hand over those bunk beds again, and I tried to hear his voice. And all I could hear was the sadness. So as I watched these elderly couples and newlyweds pore over his belongings, trying to figure out what they could bargain down and collect, my instinct was to gather up the things that reminded me of Paul. So that's what I did. His original ACT UP buttons and pins, a handful of trinkets to remind me of him. He had a pig sterling silver ring, true to form, these ornate earrings that he never wore, but I could absolutely picture him in. And I took them with me, and I intended to buy them. But that's not all I bought. I bought the things that he didn't tell me about, but I also felt like I needed to remember about him. On his bookshelf, I found a copy of Pema Chodron's When Things Fall Apart. If you don't know that book, that's the book people tell you to read when everything is fucking horrible and you have no idea how it will ever be right again. And right next to it was a copy of the AA Big Book. And in the margins, there were these tiny notes that he'd furiously scribbled, reminding himself to love himself and not give up. And I only had 30 bucks in my pocket, and I wasn't making a lot of money, but that's how I wanted to spend it. And so I bought those things, and I took them home, and I put them on my altar. And for 3 years, I could not look at them. I couldn't touch them. And eventually, I decided it was time to say goodbye. And so I took those things with me. I brought them to a retreat center that I call home. I dug a hole in the holiest graveyard that I know. And I buried what was left of Paul alongside his gay brothers, saving a handful of things to remember him by. And as I did it, I couldn't help but wonder, what would Paul think if he could see me now, this stranger, this hooker that he spent 2 hours with some random ass afternoon in July, bawling over his death in a graveyard? What would he think? What right do I have to feel this way about him? And I realized it doesn't matter, because in those 2 hours, I came to love him. And I will never forget him. I will always love him, because what he taught me is that when you open yourself up and you make yourself vulnerable, you can connect with a stranger in a way like you would your best friend, and you can fall in love. That's what I bring to my work with my patients every single day. Every single one of my patients, I don't care where they're from or what they're going through or who they have to support them when they leave my office. I want them to know that I love them. I'm the doctor who will hold your hand and cry with you in the emergency department while you miscarry the child you were just about ready to name. I'm the doctor who will use his lunch break to take you on a wheelchair ride outside for the first time in months after the rest of the team has forgotten you because they think that you're a lost cause, so that you can feel the breeze on your face. I'm the doctor who will tell you, I'm proud of you, and I'm sorry, and I don't know, and you inspire me. That's the kind of doctor I'm gonna be. It was right about then when I realized I'd been talking for a while, and all of a sudden I realized what I had just told my residency advisor. And I was terrified because I had never told another person that story before. And I was so scared about what would come next. And the first words out of her mouth were, "Thank you." She said, "I've asked that question so many times, and I've heard so many stories, but I have never heard a story like that. And I am honored to have heard that story. And I don't know you well, but I can already tell you, you are going to be an incredible doctor." And when I heard those words, words that I never thought I would hear from another human being after I shared that story, I promised myself that I would never hide that part of me again. 2 days ago, I brought my mother to Dixie's rehearsal for the show. And I told her the same story, and when we were done, she gave me a hug and she said, "I love you and I'm proud of you." What I've learned is that you don't have to be an escort or a doctor to find the type of intimacy that I'm talking about, because I do it every day. I do it in the grocery line, I do it on Muni, I do it in parks. All you have to do is be willing to be vulnerable and open yourself up and invite somebody to tell you a story, the real story. Each one of us has this incredibly unique, personal, human experience that it seems like nobody could possibly understand. Each one of us in our own way has felt sadness and despair and longing, but each one of us is also capable of tremendous power and beauty and pride. That's the world I want to live in. I want to live in a world where everybody knows that they're capable of those things. And so I'm inviting you right now to help me unleash that. If you walk by somebody and it seems like they're having a rough day, stop and ask if everything's okay. And if they say no, stop what you're doing and listen, because it's important. And if somebody does something that moves you and inspires you, let them know and say, "Thank you. That was so powerful. And I'm really glad you did that." And most importantly, if you ever find yourself dealing with something that it seems like nobody could ever possibly understand, it's just too personal, take a risk and give somebody the chance to prove you wrong, like every single person I have shared this story with has proven me wrong. Together, we can create magic. But if we're gonna do it, we have to learn how to talk. Each one of us has an incredibly important, powerful story to share. But if we don't give each other permission to share it and listen to it and honor it, we might never know how incredible the world we live in really is. Thank you.
That song was Brother's Keeper by India Arie. Welcome to today's episode of Lube Facts with Dixie, brought to you by Uber Lube. Most of us know what lube's for, right? If you have trouble articulating how important it is, here's a reminder. When a person becomes sexually aroused, their vagina typically produces extra lubrication. This sort of lubrication reduces friction, increasing comfort during sex for both partners, and it minimizes feelings of soreness or irritation. However, vaginal dryness is a common sexual issue. Artificial lubricants will reduce vaginal dryness, but they're artificial, so I recommend using UberLube. It's just silicone with a little vitamin E, there's no flavor or scent, it's body safe, and it's free of nasty additives like parabens, preservatives, and petrochemicals. Lube is a crucial factor in a sexual equation, whether it's masturbating or for partnered sex, and that's true for all genders and body types. I want you to have better sex. Lube does that, you know. So here's some incentive. Right now, my friends at UberLube are offering Body Storytelling listeners a special offer. 10% off and free shipping when you use the code DIXIE at UberLube.com. UberLube offers long-lasting performance, then quickly dissipates without leaving a sticky residue. Remember, you'll get 10% off and free shipping when you use the code DIXIE at UberLube.com. This has been Lube Facts with Dixie, brought to you by UberLube. Well, you know what body storytelling is. It's true stories of sex or kink. And that means that social media does not like us. We are not supposed to talk about these things. And I feel very strongly that if we don't talk about these things, we can't keep each other safe. We can't make each other realize we're not alone in this world. There are millions of people like us. It's really important that I be able to share that with you. And since social media doesn't want me to share that with you, I'm on Patreon. Patreon is where I can tell you the real deal. It's not nearly as restrictive as social media, and it's where I feel comfortable telling you the real stories. The stories of how things happen, the stories of what's going on in my life, the things that you send me emails and ask about all the time. That goes out to Patreon supporters. And not only that, that live show I talked about at the beginning of this episode, that live stream is being designed as a hybrid live show and live stream of the live show, specifically for our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to continue watching the live shows, there's one place they are guaranteed to be, and that's going to be on Patreon. So go to patreon.com/body. Support us at whatever level you can, but at $10 a month, you'll get a live stream ticket. So it's just like you're there at the live show. I know you want that. And not everybody's ready to hop on a plane right now, are they? So support us on Patreon, and thanks in advance for your support. Well, that's our time for this week. But before I go, I want to say thank you to the team that makes this podcast possible. Thank you to Mosa Maxwell-Smith, to Donal Mooney, to Joe Moore, to David Grossoff, and most of all, to podcast producer and live stream technical director, Marty Garcia. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour. This has been episode 176 of the Body Storytelling Podcast. See you next week, pervert.